Hey there. Welcome to Cageless, a conversation podcast about experiential wisdom and personal hope. I'm Jenny Johnson. I'm a writer, and I'm asking experts, thought leaders, and my friends to share their knowledge and tools on how they found freedom. Today, I have on someone that I think should probably, her photo should probably be next to the word resilient in Merriam-Webster. But yes, Candace, hi, how are you?
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me, Jenny.
Yes, we're so excited to have you. Yeah. So, Candace, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. My name is Candace Rooks. I am from a tiny little town in Kansas called Overbrook of about 800 people. I grew up in a very farming community, and I have found my way to LA in a very, very long but quick story. 39 years old, and I have traveled the world 8 times over with my job, and found myself based in LA at the moment.
Yes. So you said 8 times around the world, going from a small town in Kansas.
Yeah.
What kind of took you on that journey?
Yeah.
That's a very that's an abnormal thing to do.
It's still shocking to me that was even an opportunity. The music industry has actually taken me around the world. I started as a little catering girl for an arena act, and then I worked my way up after 16 years and became on the tour management level of various artists. So it's really the music industry that I owe my travels to. Also a really good work ethic, I'll say.
Yeah.
It is not an easy industry to be in as a female, especially back in the early 2000s, you know, almost 20 years ago, it wasn't very female friendly.
Right.
So it has been a struggle, but worth every bit of it.
Yes. So has your interest always been in music? I was struck when I was looking at our show notes that you had mentioned studying broadcast journalism.
Yeah,
that's a little bit of a leap.
Yes. So my father's always been big into music and playing music. But I never really knew that you could travel for music. It didn't really, I mean, I was raised by teen parents, so they didn't know anything outside of our state.
Yes.
So it was Kansas, and Kansas City was a big adventure. And occasionally we'd go to New Jersey for our family, but like, I didn't know that I could travel and do music. And so the reason I chose broadcast journalism is I actually Googled when a college counselor asked me, "What do you want to do for a living?" I was like, "Jobs that travel." And so I Googled it, and journalist was one of the top 5, you know, like Barbara Walters gets to go and travel and interview cool people. And so I just like journalism, that'll do.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, it led me to a summer internship at a local venue, which is a hilarious story how I got the internship.
Yes,
if you have time,
tell me.
I'd love to
yes,
tell you.
Of course.
Okay.
We have time.
So I made up a little white lie to the production manager. I had called originally to the amphitheater, and I asked if there was any summer internships available. And he said, "No, sorry, I filled all the positions." And so I was like, I still am going to make this happen. So I called him back with kind of a different voice. And I said, "I have, sorry to bother you. I have a school assignment. I'm supposed to interview someone in my desired profession." And, he's like, "Okay, I could give you Wednesday for an hour." And so I went in and I made up all these interview questions and addressed nice. And I asked him like literally everything I wanted to know of what he did and what it was. Like, I had no idea. So I was basically interviewing him.
Yes.
For my project, but there wasn't a project.
Right.
So when I was finished, he goes, "Do you have any more questions?" And I laughed. He didn't know I knew internships were full or whatever. And I said, "Well, when can I start?" And he laughed. He goes, "I'm so sorry. People have been calling about the internship opportunity." And he goes, "But I'm full." And I was like, "But how could you be full for a position that's free? I'm paying to actually be here. Like, how does that fill up?"
You were already a little businesswoman.
And he goes, "I just don't have time to handle 4 people." And I was like, "Well, I am absolutely willing to come onto your team as the head intern and like run the interns, and then you can just report to me. And he's like, that's a fantastic idea. I have to get it approved. So it took about 4 days. I just sat there in my college class. I was actually in one of my broadcast journalism classes at the moment, and I got his email, and his emails were always in red font on his computer, yes, no matter what. I always wrote with a red pen. He was just into the red color. And he said, congratulations. I totally got it approved. You're now the lead head of the interns and all this stuff. And every other intern under me was going to like music school and studying production and all this stuff that's supposed to be what you're supposed to be doing. So I just made it up all summer.
Right.
And at the end of the summer, I wasn't ready to go. And I said, are you hiring for the fall? And he's like, no. And I'm like, well, I'm going to keep coming.
Yes.
So I worked for free for this amphitheater for an entire year. And in doing so, it literally introduced me to every big player that I needed to know to start my career in the music industry.
Yes.
So rock and roll catering companies, tour managers, production managers. And so those people that I worked for the first time, I'm still in contact with and still continue to work for. It was funny, at the end of the summer, he's like, you never told me what you got on that little project you did. I was like, that wasn't real. And he's like, okay, you're going to survive in this industry. He's like, I can't believe you lied to me, but I see why you did it now. And we had the best summer ever. And his summer was easier because he wasn't having to directly delegate everything. And I honestly would have sold hot dogs at that venue that summer just to work there.
Yes.
But I just knew once I got my foot in the door, that was going to lead me to something fun. And then I was able to tie the journalism and the music together. And it just, my path has been completely chosen for me when I didn't really know what I was doing.
Seems like a lot of the successful people that I've come in contact with, I've noticed that they don't really walk through doors, they kind of build windows.
Yeah.
And it seems as though people say like, oh, I saw an opportunity and I took it. But the real resilient and hardworking people build their own opportunities. And if there isn't a way, then you make one.
Yep.
And that's all. I mean, obviously the universe can twist your arm and make it very evident that that isn't the correct path to be taking. But mm-hmm. a lot of the time, if we just let circumstance and our passions kind of marry each other, we're going to be directed on a path of success. Even at such a young age, your work ethic was already ingrained in you. Were you taught kind of this like growth mindset mentality? Was this modeled by your parents? By where did you accumulate that kind of wisdom so early on?
I really, truly think it came from my young mother. She was 16 when she had me. She dropped everything and was just like the most motivated mother in the world. She started a program called the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program because there was no sex ed curriculum in our area. So she started a program because it didn't exist. And I grew up in this program and saw her make all these waves and moves in our town. And so it just kind of set the tone for me to, if what you want doesn't exist, make it happen. And for her to have that type of motivation with being, she was 19 with two kids at this point, still pushing the envelope with different things in our very conservative small town. It was just so motivating.
Yes.
So didn't realize how much of an influence she had been until, you know, you get older and you're like, holy crap, I got that from, you know, my mom. And my dad on the other side of it was just the follow your heart and very hippie. My mom was like, this step 1 through 10. My dad was the complete opposite. So I got like both sides of it to where if my step 1 through 10 didn't work out, then I had my dad's mentality of like, oh, something else will happen. And so it was very, very good balance of my parents for sure.
Yes, I do.
Doesn't
the older we get, the more that we recognize, even though it's much easier to pick out the like things that we don't like about our parents or our families, it's like we bleed the same blood regardless, and there's always going to be good and harmful and helpful things in our families that are implemented into us. But Do you find yourself gravitating back towards Kansas a little bit more at this during this phase of your life?
Well, even prior to the pandemic, I had felt myself wanting to set down some roots and slow down a bit. I didn't necessarily think it would be back in my hometown, because when I left there, I left, one, because I had the opportunity to travel the world, but I also didn't base myself out of there because I felt like I had matured culturally and a little more, I just felt like I had outgrown it a bit. And going back home now to visit, it seems that the city has kind of caught up with the maturity level that I want to be around, and there's so many creatives there now, and it just seems to have kind of gotten with the times, so to say, and at least the Kansas City realm. So I found myself wanting to go back and bring my worldly wisdom to the city, because I'm very passionate about where I grew up and where I'm from. So I want to bring all my knowledge and a new perspective. You know, they're still very stuck back in the end times, and buildings are run down. And I just want to bring in this new eye and just put all of my energy towards passions with nonprofits and volunteering and involving kind of the unfortunate people that are just left behind. I really want to bring my passions to KC and start basing myself out of there. Yeah. So,
yes. I'm excited. So if we can take a couple steps back after your internship program and after college, can you kind of give me a little rundown on the funnel of the beginning of your career? Because you have worked with some of the biggest musicians in the world, Justin Bieber, Justin Timberlake, John Legend, and you have also worn a lot of different hats. You are the queen of pivoting. So tell me a little bit about kind of the roles that you have played in touring music.
Yeah, of course. So I started with the catering, rock and roll catering, and that's kind of the best way for you to get in, unless you have a specialized task of audio or video or lighting. It's kind of your intro into production, so to say. I started with catering with an arena tour called the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, which is just an annual Christmas massive entity. We have 42 semi-trucks of gear, so it's like quite the thing. So it led into some other things, some Irish bands, but my main artist I was with for the beginning of my career that really set the tone was John Legend for 5 years. And working with him and his wife Chrissy in all aspects, I then became his production coordinator was the title, but because there was only 8 of us, because I was with John pre all of me, I did his wardrobe, his dressing rooms, his travel logistics, his catering, you know, wore every hat possible for this guy. But in doing so, it taught me all the things, you know, I handled all the daily money and it was just wonderful. I was back of house and then there was a production manager that did kind of the front of house, you know, stuff. So
What year was this?
Ages ago. I think I've been away from John for, man, almost 8 plus. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was back early 2000. My first tour ever was in 2003. And then once it was hard for me to leave John Legend's tour, and it was my choice because I had reached the top of the tour in regards to responsibility and moving up. And I wanted to expand either other genres or move up in positions or do different things. And so I chose to leave John's tour. And after doing so, it just opened up. It was the most terrifying thing I've ever done because it had been my security blanket for 5 years. But I had worked too hard to just stay in the same comfortable position. But I wanted to push the envelope a bit and just give it a go. And so I put myself out there and I started again at the lower level. I started at the theater bar type of bands again, and you had to work your way up. And so, but eventually it led to the bigger guys like Jonas Brothers and Timberlake, as you mentioned, and Bieber. And there's been so many. Probably my favorite individual I've ever worked with was Will Smith and his kids. They've been an absolute blessing. They're wonderful. So being in that realm, that kind of led to then being on a movie set. And it was just like all these different avenues that I wouldn't have gotten if I would have stayed in my comfort zone with John.
Yes. Yeah. Which I wanted to mention, what is your mindset on the term of growth and knowing when to stay, when to go? Because a lot of people find solace in comfortability. They find it to look much more enticing to stay on solid ground rather than taking the leap out of the nest, if you will. And so what do you feel like? Was there a nudge inside of you? Was there another voice of reason? Where did that enticing thought come from?
So the thought to move on from John Legend was when I stopped learning new things. Like, I had become so comfortable in the position that I could do it with my eyes closed. If someone left the tour, I could probably do their job. I became so comfortable that I do get bored in a way. And I'm all about learning new stuff. I don't think you have to stop learning at all.
Yes.
And so as soon as
even in the time that I have known you, you are such an adventurous soul. You are never going to turn down an experience or an opportunity, which with that comes a lot of vulnerability, I will also say, is being comfortable with wanting to fail. Because I don't even want to say that it's 50-50. I would say it's a higher chance to fail. But what really is failing?
Correct. You know? Honestly, I don't feel failure ever. I don't feel regret a lot, and I don't feel failure because I literally, anything that ever comes from a failure, I've learned so much from, even about myself. Because I work in such a giving industry, to where I have to give so much of myself. If I have a moment where I fail, I'm able to focus on me. Why did this not work? And it's more reflective for me, where otherwise I'm just give all the time. So I give myself new challenges so that I am able to focus on why didn't that work for me? You know, so really I thrive for failure because that means I'm trying something new I haven't tried before. And I'm going to learn something out of it, whether it's a new sport or a job or a skill or even just a conversation with someone. It could be an epic fail. The only thing I truly sucked at was dating. And that was not my forte. Obviously, you're in a different city, different country every day. Dating is almost impossible. It's a very military type of lifestyle. So it's not a thing. So thank bless COVID has allowed me to date and to meet someone amazing, which has been, you know, 39 years in the making. So it's good. That's my biggest failure there is the dating realm. But other than that,
what even is failing in dating? Because if I think that a lot of the time our culture has assigned success as synonymous with marriage, which myself at my age that I am at, I have seen people older than me and of my age either come out on the other side of a marriage through, you know, a divorce or choosing not to marry. And like both sides have pros and cons. So I don't even think that like all of my relationships I've painted as like failures, but like not really, because an experience, just like with everything else, can be a learning opportunity.
Yeah. You just triggered a memory in my brain of another reason why I left Kansas was because there was such a timeline placed on us at such a very young age. And even my mom, at being such a young mom at 16, she couldn't believe that I was the age I was and was no interest in marriage, you know, or whatever. And I did fall into the trap. I did. I got married at 23. I got divorced at 27, no children, but I was just following that timeline. And it was just terrifying for me. I cannot deal with someone putting me in a box. And that's what Kansas had done culturally. That's what they're taught to do if you're not doing something by a certain timeline. And so I had to get out. And what I did find on the road was my music industry people, there was no timeline for them other than the show schedule. You know, it wasn't weird for me to be a 35-year-old female on tour with no kids. Like, that made me more employable and knowledgeable, because most of the time women stop touring after a certain age because they want to start a family or get married. But I wanted
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, but so good.
They're having you as an example, I think, for women in particular that go into the creative field, especially in music. there is no timeline.
Nope.
There is no timeline.
No timeline at all. And I, the older I get in touring, I want to continue to tour so that I can mentor younger women to be in it. And it's still very intimidating and it's very old school mentality. Although we're really trying, several females of us experienced in the industry are really trying to change the mentality of men on tour and let them know, like every other industry, it's some things are not okay. And
time's up.
Yeah. Yep. And it's, I feel like the music industry has been the last on that realm to kind of accept that because there is zero accountability. There's no rules. There's no HR. There's nothing. So that's, as I venture kind of out of that full-time touring, because some of my tours would last up to 2 years solid on the road, I want to focus my attention on advocating for those that are still on tour and becoming that kind of HR realm of touring and being that person that they can call and I will handle it for them. Because as yes. a female on tour, you're not allowed to go into production and report someone doing something because
who are you going to report it to?
You just don't really. Right. You find a safe person on tour and you tell them and they kind of do this backside bullying them out of bothering you. And there are certain productions out there that really do support women and it's getting better. But for the most part, most of the tours, you have to just stay quiet because then you're being dramatic and mm-hmm. you obviously don't want this job very much if you can't handle the road. And it's just like, right. it's just, I didn't want to ever get jaded. And instead of getting jaded and saying, screw this, I'm finding a way to improve it for other females because it is a fantastic industry. It shaped my entire life, really.
Yes.
And I want it to be good and healthy. And I know we have a long way to go, but even if my path for touring wasn't just the travel, it was honestly just to get experience and being able to help others that want to do it. Because
right.
nonprofits right. where my heart is. I hate money. I hate everything to do with money. I don't like it. I think it shapes people and drives them where I'm not driven by money at all.
Yes.
So that's where my heart goes into. You obviously have to survive,
right.
But I want experiences and I want to help people. And that's kind of where my passion is now instead of like the grunt of touring to make money.
Right. Which if I may reframe that, like, relationships are the highest form of currency.
Yes.
Experiences are the most valuable thing. What's the commercial that's like so-and-so, and it gives you all the prices, and then it's like, this experience, priceless.
Yes.
I don't remember which. I think it's like insurance or something.
Yeah. Very powerful.
But,
yeah.
Yes, but people are the most valuable asset. No one is going to read off your, any of your bills.
Yeah,
or like
your bankroll
any of
when
your,
you die.
Your stocks at your funeral. Do you have any wisdom to speak onto that of, kind of how did you not fall into that? Or did you, and have you learned from it?
So that's a good question. The money aspect of it, how did I not fall into it? So you do make a good living on the road and it is a full profit industry. Right. So what I did with my money, I never fell into it. I never wanted to look at my bank account because it would give me this false sense of reality of I wanted to keep doing it for my passion and not for the big bankroll. So what I did was I used my money to pay off my student loans and I used it as an avenue to set myself up for when I was done touring. And that I'm not sure where that came from because I grew up extremely poor. And as soon as I get $10, I wanted to spend it on something. But it was usually something like a globe or an atlas or something to plan and experience. So money to me is truly just a mechanism to plan for the future. And I just focused on the experiences because I took so much more from that than the paycheck. But I also am on the opposite spectrum of it. There were no backup plans for touring professionals when COVID hit. And most of us weren't able to apply for unemployment or get any assistance from the government. Most of us didn't even get stimulus checks. So it was something to where we went from a large you know, bank account to literal zero, and it takes you, it humbles you so much. I had to just trust that would be okay. And what I did was I made up jobs while we were off tour.
You were building other windows.
Yeah, a lot of our industry got angry at the last artist they were working for because they didn't pay them out through the rest of the year, you know, so they were pissed off at their artists. And I'm like, they're trying to survive too. You know, it's like, they're not thinking about you right now, which that's how the industry goes. So it just,
which it is, it's a tough world. And the sooner that I think that you learn that the world doesn't owe you anything,
that's correct,
the more you can learn to play the cards that you're dealt, which is how resiliency is built. Yeah. I think that no one teaches you how to listen to your inner voice. No, you know what I mean? Correct. You can observe other people, whether that's your parents or teachers or friends or mentors. But it sounds like that has been a huge catalyst for you, is kind of that inherent instinct to keep going and to make things happen.
Yeah, it really has. And I remember just even as a young girl, because I kind of grew up with my parents, to be honest. You know, my mom is only 16 years older than me. So when she's maturing, I'm growing up. And so we kind of grew up with her and learned stuff together. And I think that made me mature sooner and helped open my eyes a bit, where I, you know, couldn't just be a kid and careless. I always had to make my own money and be creative. For prom in high school, if I wanted a prom dress, I had to do four girls' hair to make money to then buy. My mom would front me the money for my dress, but I would have to do four girls' hair that day to pay my mom back for the dress to make enough money to get my hair done. And so I've always, I didn't see her as punishing me for not buying me that dress. I saw it, and honestly, even at a young age, I was like, well, this is what I have to do. I didn't think like, oh, my mom won't do this for me. Like, I was never poor me mentality.
Right.
Because when you do that, it just holds you back, and someone else is going to get in front and take care of it.
Yes. You know?
So I've never sat back and just whined about anything. Like, I'm just
right, because if you aren't doing it,
someone else is gonna do it.
Which I will also preface that statement with, a lot of the time abuse can be perpetuated with that mindset. But in terms of starting out in an industry or starting out in a work environment, never having any type of ego has always served myself well, and it sounds like it served you well.
Absolutely.
Also, could you give me a little bit of a rundown of the funnel of jobs that you've done in accordance to the music industry? So you started out managing, essentially.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, managing the interns, which was hilarious because I'd never done. Catering crew chief, production coordinator, been road manager, tour manager, personal assistant, and wardrobe as like seamstress. I've done some seriously heavy seamstress work, costume design. Yeah, I've just.
Which you have helped me out with some with some clothing situations, I will say.
Yeah. I just, in order to be, especially a female in the industry, you have to be very multifaceted. And I think in all of life, you just have to be very multifaceted, and you end up spreading yourself a bit thin. But I've never been one to, again, it comes back to the failure thing. I've never been one to say no to an opportunity because I'm scared I can't do it. Because I know any opportunity that's been thrown at me, I give it my best and usually succeed at it. And if I don't and I fail, I'm just never try again, really. Or if I really am passionate about it, I just try it a different way. So it's been, for me, my first wardrobe gig I ever had was with an Irish troupe of five men and a huge band behind them. And they said, can you sew? And I'm like, yes. And I could not sew. So I did another little fib, but it was 2 months till the tour started. So
I don't know if it was a fib as it was more of a challenge.
Correct.
Of like,
thank you.
I will be able to do this by the time that I need to.
Yes. I mean, I could thread a machine, and I had sewn some backdrops for some theater stuff, so I could do a straight line. But they were talking like, can you reconstruct or build clothing? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I went to Goodwill, and I bought a bunch of men's suits. I actually bought a kilt and a little Irishy influenced clothing, heavy material because most of it's made of wool. And I just spent 2 months taking it apart and watching YouTube tutorials, and I put it all back together and I altered it, and I had people try it on and I pinned it on them, and my friends at the time were like, "You're a psychopath." But I was
I learned see you as such this like builder of of whatever your mind can create. You almost take it on as a challenge of, "I can do this."
Yeah. It was the best decision I ever made, because every single thing I did for that tour, I learned as I went along, and it set the tone to be able to wear the double hats on tour, which made me more employable. Oh, you can sew. This artist doesn't require a lot of alterations or wardrobe demand, but if we needed it, we had a tour sewing machine that I could set up in an afternoon and hem John's pants or whatever I needed to do, which was just, I never got paid anything extra for being that type, that person on tour, but it just, it made everyone's life easier, and I didn't have to hire a seamstress to come in and manage another person. You know, I just would rather do it myself.
So learn as you go.
Learn as you go.
And you're never going to be ready.
No, you're never. If you wait till you're ready, that's when you're 50 and you realize, shit, I missed all these opportunities because I'm terrified of it. So my goal now is to travel the world on my own account, because I've always been told where to go. And on occasion I would do little, if a tour ended, my one experience was I was finishing a tour with Will Smith in Croatia, and John Legend started in Scotland, and I had some time in between, 2 weeks. And they're like, "Where do you want to go?" And I said, "I want to go to Bali." And this was over Christmas. So they flew me to Bali, and I had to get myself back to tour. But it was just like, I want to do those type of things now for myself and see the world in my own eyes instead of loading docks and various venues. So that's my dream now, is to tour for, or to travel for pleasure instead of work. But I would, traveling is just my absolute passion.
And it's almost like this time in your life, even though the pandemic has stopped a lot of the things that we had planned, almost this pivot of plan is just another practice of your resiliency, but almost in a sense more of like self-care.
Yes.
Of like, oh, I'm going to take the cards that I've been dealt, and I actually get to build myself a little boat, and I'm going to go.
Yes.
I'm going to go somewhere and really take care of myself, because I do think that you most definitely deserve it. We all deserve to have a breather after all of the hard work that we've put in.
Absolutely.
You are saying that this next phase of your life, you feel like you've worked really hard to build all of this resiliency, all of this work ethic, and you're getting to kind of take a breather at 39, as you know, 39 years of really hard work. I would say that you deserve it. What do you feel like gets you up in the morning to say, like, I still want to live, I still want to go, I still want to try?
What gets me keep go? What is encouraging me to keep going is helping other people, really. Honestly, it is. I want to keep our music industry alive, and I know it's not heavy in touring at the moment for safety purposes, but it will get back there. I also have missed a lot of family time, you know, with touring. I was able to be very selfish and tour the world for my job with my family just supporting me from afar. And I have a lot of nieces and cousins and young people in my life that I also want to influence and encourage. And I just haven't been there for them. So that's been a sacrifice that I've made with all of this grand adventure, is my family and people that I love. Right now, I think my focus is to reconnect and make those bonds and just be there for them, you know, with the perspective I have, but also just be there in person. I crave that now, where I missed my family, but I wanted to travel and do my own thing. But now I actually crave being there for the things. I've never been able to attend weddings or baby showers or graduations. That's just not something you can do with this type of job. So I kind of want to slow down and do those things. And so that's where I think my 40s will be, is really focused on family and establishing some roots and still dabbling in our industry and going out on the little short runs. But I think my focus is truly family and creating those bonds that have been just on hold for 16, 17 years, which is insane.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, in the time that I have known you, I have felt like family with you. You are such a generous, kind soul who, as I mentioned, she has helped me with clothing malfunctions. She has helped me with my dog. And it's just, it's what an honor and pleasure it is to get to know you and learn from you and call you my friend.
Absolutely.
If there was one thing that you could tell your younger self, what would you say to her today?
Don't worry what other people think about you. I think honestly, my biggest, stressor in life has been, I was not afraid to do things, but I always was very cautious on how I was perceived by other people. And I do feel like in certain opportunities that held me back. Luckily, because I'm a bit older, my main younger life wasn't focused on the social media aspect to where I was judged constantly. That didn't come into effect, honestly, till I was done with college, which shows my age. But even after that and before that, there was always this, you know, looming thing as females where we constantly feel like we have to uphold this certain standard. And especially on tour, I was surrounded by men all the time. And so I was very self-conscious and I fluctuated with my weight. And I wanted to love myself more. Back in the day. But I think this is a fault of being raised by a teen mom. My mom was also very self-conscious and wouldn't leave the house without a full face of makeup. And
we learn those things, you know, from our parents.
We sure do. So if I could tell my younger self anything, it would definitely be to love yourself no matter what and just stop worrying about what everyone else thinks about you.
Yes. So,
yeah. That'd be the biggest thing.
Well, I love getting to watch you. When I think of Candace, I think of such a free woman. You are not bound by any person, place, job. You have found so much freedom, I think, in your life, and that's really sweet to watch.
Thank you. I feel it. I feel it. Like I never feel stuck anywhere in anything. And I'm not a runner. I don't run when it's hard. But I do keep the open mind of I can go if this isn't suiting me, and I never will stay and do the poor me thing. I just can't.
Yes,
do that, so.
Which is what was what makes you cageless, I would say.
Yes, perfect. Yes, I've felt cageless my whole life.
Well, thank you for taking time to chat with me. I'm so
very
grateful.
Welcome.
And how can we find you? Can you tell us how can we find you online?
Yes. Well, I'm not super privy on the social media, but my Instagram is Candace Rukes, R-U-K-E-S, C-A-N-D-I-C-E-R-U-K-E-S.
Wonderful.
And then I also work for a nonprofit, the Rhodey Clinic. So you can find me on that website.
Wonderful.
The Rhodey Advocacy Group. So
anyone who's looking for, you know, a way into the industry or someone someone to contact that way. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, we're so appreciative of you. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify, Apple, anywhere you get your podcast. It's important because, well, I want to know what you think. You can ask me questions at Cageless Podcast on Instagram or text me at 903-871-5092.